We're now joined in the studio by WOOC youth interns Ariana Young and Aaron Pinder, and they're going to be interviewing Lisa Good. They'll also introduce who Lisa Good is to our listenership. Welcome.
Today, we are lucky enough to be joined in the studio by Lisa Good. Lisa runs a grief counseling and service program out of Albany called Urban Grief. Urban Grief is a community-based program dedicated to the study of the effect of violence on families and especially young people. Their vision statement reads, "The goal is to implement a sustainable trauma or grief program to transform communities through healing in the aftermath of violence and death. Exposure to violence and death has severe emotional and mental effects on the family, friends, and community members." Welcome to the show, Lisa.
Thank you for having me.
Can you please define what would you consider to be a traumatic event for a young person?
So according to the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Administration, in the broadest sense, trauma is described as an event or a series of events or circumstances that a person experiences, and they experience that as threatening, whether it's physically or emotionally. It could be life-threatening, but the key piece is that it has lasting adverse effects on the individual. So there are lots of events that can fall into that category. For instance, a death, a accident, a natural disaster, incarceration of a parent, witnessing violence, exposure to community violence. Those are just some examples.
Effects of a community trauma, one that is repeatedly on the news or witnessed firsthand on an event on a individual child?
So again, the effect, when you talk about community-wide, right, if you think of it like throwing a pebble into a body of water, right? And you throw it way out and it ripples, right? The immediate point of impact is where you see the strongest traumatic effect or impact, right? And then from there, it kind of radiates out to the shore, so to speak. So the closer you are to the point of impact, of course, the more impact you're going to directly experience. But as you get a little bit further away, you know, how you experience your that exposure to that traumatic event is going to be determined in relationship to your proximity to the situation or the event. So if it was someone you didn't know, but you see it on the news, you know, it may make you sad. It may make you, you know, have a range of emotions, but it may not necessarily traumatize you. But if you see it on the news and it's your best friend or it's your family member, now we're getting into this proximity of impact.
Can you please delineate the difference between an impact of a trauma on a young person's brain and the impact on an adult brain? And was it important to know the difference?
I think the easiest way to distinguish the difference is that a child's brain, an adolescent's brain, is still developing, right? The emotional part of the brain is still developing. The judgment part of the brain is still developing. And so with that being said, children don't have the same capacity to deal with a traumatic event in the way that adults would, whose brains are fully developed. But however, the experience of childhood trauma, if an adult has experienced a lot of childhood trauma, their brain and how they their brain is been challenged and changed by those experiences. But nonetheless, a child's brain is still developing, and that's why it's so important that we do whatever we can to mitigate the harmful impact of traumatic events for children. And then also protect them from even having to experience traumatic events like community violence to begin with.
How are young people impacted by the responses that adults have to traumatize in the environment?
Oh, wow. So that's my hot button, right? Okay. That is my hot button. I think that children are very much impacted by how the adults around them respond to traumatic events. And let me just preface it with this, that sometimes children, particularly adolescents, experience events and situations that are traumatic for them in nature, and adults have no idea that they've experienced those types of situations, right? That's one thing. But when you have situations where adults are fully knowledgeable about a particular event or situation that has occurred in a family or in a community or in a school where you know that that kid is devastated by that, but guess what? You as the adult, you're also devastated, right? And so it becomes really hard for adults when they are devastated and struggling to cope and understand something to also have to try to figure out how they're going to help their kids struggle and cope with it. So, you know, I'm a firm believer, and I call it my big cup, little cup theory, right? Okay, it's a cup, right? And I kind of look at adults as big cups, right? That we have a greater degree or greater capacity or more room to handle stuff than kids do, right? And so if as adults, our cup is full and it's overflowing with life and bills and responsibilities and our own losses and our own traumas and all this other kind of stuff, and then our kids are experiencing things too, but their cups aren't as big, so it doesn't take as much stuff for their cups to reach that limit. If the adult's cup is full, right, and the kid's cup is full, where is their capacity for adults to really manage and be present for the kids who need them to most, the most? So to that point, I feel it's very, very important for adults to take care of themselves so that they can be attentive to the kids around them, as opposed to saying, oh, he looks all right, oh, she looks all right. And that's not the case at all. And most times kids know that and they kind of put on a front for the adults because they kind of size you up and they say, she can't handle that. He can't handle that. And then they kind of shut down, they pull back. And then that's when they, you know, you can get into some trouble at that point. I just recently changed the mission statement, so I just want to share it with you because I think it's more encompassing. The vision statement for Urban Grief is resilient and peaceful communities empowered to promote healing in the face of crisis. And the mission statement is that we respond to crisis, trauma, and grief, providing comprehensive solutions to individuals and communities. And so I think that both of those things kind of summarize, you know, my vision, and my goal with even doing this work. I started doing this in 2001, because I saw that there was a gap, in terms of the high level of losses, whether it was through overdoses, violence, sudden deaths, you know, I saw a lot. And, you know, I just didn't really see anything available at that time that was responding specifically in a culturally sensitive way to the needs of urban residents. And I think that we do have some unique needs.
All right, so what are the various programs of Urban Grief?
So the primary function is to respond in the aftermath of violence. So the bulk of my work is really centered around outreach to shooting victims, right? To homicide survivors, and to those individuals in our community, particularly in the city of Albany, who have been shot or stabbed or seriously assaulted, but primarily shot. And so the goal is to reach those folks, give them information about victim services, give them information about crime victims compensation, and educate them about trauma and just kind of be present. You know, violence and trauma related to violence creates a whole host of needs that can't, the trauma part of the violence or the death can't even be addressed until we deal with some of the basic needs that emerge after violence. So for instance, if you get shot and you get shot at your house, you know, and your door is shot up and there's blood in your house, and then you go to the hospital, you're in the hospital for a week or whatever, and you get discharged from the hospital. Tell me, are you going to want to stay at home?
No.
No. Right. Right? But do you not know that the expectation is that people just go back to that? So if I and my family members are traumatized by this experience, okay, and now we have to go back into that setting, mm-hmm. what do you think the focus is going to be? It's not going to be on, oh, I need to go see a counselor or a therapist, right? Or, oh, I need to take care of my trauma. No, that's not going to be the focus at all. The focus is going to be safety. Mm-hmm. The focus is going to be stability. And we get that notion and that concept with other types of crime victims, like domestic violence survivors or, victims of stalking. We get that notion with other types of survivors, but we don't necessarily get that notion when it comes to that young black guy that gets shot in Arbor Hill or in Troy or in Schenectady or whatever the case may be. There is a stereotype that says, oh, well, they were doing something, so they must have deserved to be shot. And so therefore, because they deserve to be shot because they were doing something, then they don't have the safety needs. Their families don't have the safety needs, or the economic impact that comes with being a victim of violence. A lot of moms lose their jobs or have their economic stability jeopardized just because their son or their daughter was a victim of community violence. And now they have to take off time from work to be at the hospital or to go to this appointment or to do this or to do that. And so it's really destabilizing.
I could have my own personal question. Can you be responsible for, like, your own traumatic events?
Say that one more time.
Can you be responsible for your own traumatic events?
Like, responsible?
Yeah,
actually you can, right? Because here's the crazy thing, right? Sometimes when we experience a lot of trauma, right, over time, if it's left unaddressed, we kind of come up with these ways of handling things in not so cool ways, right? And so in that context of handling things in not so cool ways, sometimes we take risk and we put ourselves in situations that lead to exposure to more traumatic events. And so, I'll give you a personal example. So when I was 17, my cousin was murdered. And, you know, after he was murdered, all the adults, they kind of, you know, it happened in Louisiana. So they all went and, you know, to the funeral, whatever. But here it is. No one asked me if I wanted to go. Mm-hmm. Right. It was not even really an option. So I didn't. And he was like my brother. And so, you know, I was just kind of left at home, and I was already having some issues and some challenges, right? Because, you know, that's how life is, right? Well, I was already having some issues. So I was already struggling with being what my parents expected me to be. So I'd already kind of started, you know, maybe drinking and experimenting with a little weed and smoking and doing some other things, right? Mm-hmm. But when he died, I felt worthless. I felt hopeless. And because of that, in my mind, I believed that my parents and my family would have been better off if I had died and not him. Right? And what that led me to was, because I didn't care, I just got reckless and I started taking a lot of risk that put me in some very, very dangerous situations. And one of those situations resulted in me being sexually assaulted, right? And so now I had that trauma. But because I blamed myself, I couldn't then say to my parents, oh, you know, and they asked me, you know, like, did, you know, something happen? Did that person do something? And I was like, no. And again, you know, trauma and the pain of it and the devastation of it survives and thrives in darkness and silence. And so that for me was an example of how one trauma and it not being tended to kind of helped me to spiral out to where I was reckless and I put myself in another situation that led to more trauma. Now, am I directly responsible for what that individual chose to do? Absolutely not. However, did I make some choices that put me in the jackpot? And do I have to accept some responsibility for that part of it? Absolutely, I do.
How do you infuse hope, like a sense of hope in families and community members?
You infuse hope by connecting with other people who are positive. Sometimes trauma can rob you of your sense of having a future. We call it a foreshortened sense of future. So a lot of times people who experience a lot of trauma don't see their lives. They have a difficulty planning and thinking for the future. And that's why you could have a high school student who's doing great and all of a sudden they just go off the deep end and you're like, why? Well, what happened? Well, what was the point? And they'll say, well, what was the point? I didn't really see a point in finishing that. I'm probably not going to go to college anyway. Who cares? And all of the adults are saying that doesn't make sense, but it does make sense if they've experienced a lot of trauma. So one of the ways that I think that we can infuse hope is connection, right? We have to connect with other people, who are healthy. The other aspect to connection is that we got to celebrate the strengths that we have. Because if you are still here and you have endured trauma, that is a gift. Your life is a gift. And that's something that you have to affirm. And as long as you are alive, there is still an opportunity for healing. And so connections with healthy, safe people. I have this acronym. It's called ASK. It's A-S-K. It's triple A, and it's ask, accept, acknowledge, ask, and accept, right? You gotta acknowledge that trauma has, you know, kind of messed up your life, and then you gotta, ask for help, and then you gotta accept the help when it's offered, and that is one of the ways we can kind of help young people get to a path of hope and healing.
How can you connect with somebody who they want to be connected with?
Woo! That is a hard question. How I connect with lots of people that don't want to be connected with, right? Sometimes it's just it's being present. It's being non-judgmental. It's being patient. Because people who have experienced a lot of trauma, particularly deaths, like the loss of friends and close family members, sometimes, or they've been, taken away from their homes because of foster care, or they've, their parents have abandoned them or whatever. Sometimes people, have difficulty connecting and forming relationships. So in order to connect with them, it takes patience, it takes perseverance, it takes consistency and compassion.
That was Lisa Good of Urban Grief speaking about the impact of traumatic events on communities. You can communicate with members of Urban Grief at urbangrief2001@gmail.com.
Lisa, do you have any final words for us? Thank you for being here.
I just want to encourage everyone who may be listening that, you know, if you are a young person, I'm speaking to young person people right now, I just want to encourage you to not give up on your life. No matter how much adversity you have experienced, don't give up on your life. There are caring adults out there. Don't give up. You can make it. I want you to know suicide is not the answer. Drugs will only take you deeper down. Keep reaching, and don't give up on your life. There is hope after trauma.